Hello and welcome to AIPT Comics Podcast. We're on episode 82. My name is David Brook. I'm here with Forrest Hollingsworth. Forrest, how you doing?
Hello, my name is Forrest with two R's and I'm doing okay. I'm looking down the barrel of 10 days of vacation.
Ooh, baby.
Gonna do some comics reading, gonna do some video game playing. Also gonna do some of those chores that you don't want to do normally. Make you feel real good when they're done. Like we're gonna clean under the bed.
Yeah,
kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm doing all right.
Nice, yes, cleaning house. It's almost like spring cleaning, although we're in the middle of summer?
Middle of summer. It's 101 degrees outside.
Ugh.
It's not the best time to be doing physical labor, but I will do it.
I just saw on Monday, it's going to be 98 in Boston.
Yeah.
Not fun, not fun. But what is fun is this show where we talk about comic books, we recap the biggest news of the week, and we review comics too. Later in the show, we have Jill Carter from Kamikaze, the comic book shop in Somerville, Mass, to talk about how the going-ons has been at the comic shop during this pandemic. For instance, DC Comics switching away from Diamond, as well as what she's been reading and some other stuff too. She's actually the manager at Kamikaze, which won the Eisner Award in 2017 as best comic book shop in the world. So hang in for that interview. It's a really good one. She's very insightful and she drops the knowledge on us.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get there though, we're gonna recap the biggest news of the week. In the top of the news, Tom King on Friday calls out Jay Lee. Earlier in the day, DC Comics revealed a Jay Lee variant cover for his upcoming book, Rorschach. And then a couple hours later, Tom King came out and on Twitter and announced or made a statement basically saying, DC does not consult creators on alternate covers. I reached out to them to express my deep disappointment. Far as I'm concerned, the original Rorschach number one cover is the cover.
And to zoom out just a little bit, the reason why Tom King wanted to distance himself from Jay Lee was that Lee has done covers for Comics Gate
right
creatives, including Ethan Van Shiver.
Mm-hmm.
And largely that may be because Jay Lee did covers in the 90s for Cyberfrog.
Mm-hmm.
And continue to do covers for Cyberfrog now. It's unknown whether or not Jay Lee is going to continue to release those covers at this stage. But basically, Tom King posted this message. They don't consult creatives, as you said. This is the official cover to Rorschach number one, which I still can't believe is coming out at all. Ethan Van Shiver said, this is a shameful thing you've done. History will judge you for it. Hashtag cancel culture. Hashtag ComicsGate.
Mm.
And then several creatives and some journalists said that they reached out to Jay Lee directly or through his agent, and that they both said that Jay Lee is not on social media. He does not check social media. He is unaware of ComicsGate.
Right, right. Which is understandable.
Tom King said, I spoke with Jay. He's not on Twitter, didn't know ComicsGate existed, and does not support hate of any kind. We're all good. The best possible outcome.
Yeah, he said that on Twitter a couple hours later.
Yes.
So there were a couple hours there where a lot of people were like, good on you, Tom. Screw ComicsGate, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw quite a few people disappointed with Jay Lee.
Yep.
And it seems that this may have been a miscommunication. You know, I do find it very hard to believe that Jay has worked with EVS for decades and no one has reached out and said, man, that's pretty hateful shit, right?
Right.
Like, have you seen what Ethan's up to? But you know, there is a buffer sometimes between creatives and the industry. I saw some very high up people on Twitter, artists and writers, saying that's how some of these people operate. They have an agent, they get work. They send their work to their agent. They're done. They don't plug into the community. They don't plug into social media. They operate in an entirely different way. And I think that that's valid.
Yeah, especially for Jay Lee, who predominantly just does covers now, where they aren't even really even interact with the writers of the comics they're drawing covers for. They literally just get a prompt and then draw to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, so it's a understandable. It's a weird, messy situation that I think has an understandable outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I will take, despite some caution around knowing what Jay Lee knew or didn't know, I will take him disavowing them now, at least through King, as a net positive.
I can't imagine DC was happy about this happening at all, because Rorschach was literally just announced a week ago.
Right. And you have your writer leading the campaign, too.
Yes.
It's not normally that way.
No. No. Although, I mean, in a way, you know, it's, I mean, any news is good news sometimes, right? Like, there is a lot of, people talking about this book that probably didn't even know it existed.
Yeah. I mean, I think DC does bank on that sometimes as well.
Sure.
You know, I think Tom King is a guy that lives by his morals or by his perceived values, which are, of course, relative. But I think that this is a good thing that he has done.
Yeah.
And I commend that.
For sure. Well, last week we were talking about how Dynamite was involved with ComicsGate, related to what we were just talking about. And they actually came out and said, well, we had no idea that backing this Indiegogo was going to be so polarizing. They literally said neither one of us realized the cover would be so polarizing. So I guess they're trying to scale it back, but with the weakest way possible.
Yeah, because this is a kind of we're sorry you were upset
right.
apology, which is not substantive.
It's not going to change minds, especially not the most important ones yet, because Mark Russell tweeted out, like, that's not enough. You got to do more.
And, yeah. And
yeah.
Yeah. I think Russell even indicated, you know, I have since heard some things about the CEO of Dynamite and what he supports behind closed doors and that kind of stuff. So I think that people latched onto this and recognized that it wasn't just one errant comic cover. Or right. Indiegogo campaign at a larger pattern, and that's going to take substantial time to dismantle. I'm not going to be covering them for the foreseeable future.
No, and nor is AIPT. We stand by our statement that we will not be working with anyone that works with anyone that is bigoted and racist and a hate group.
Yeah.
I think Dynamite. There is a possibility they could get our good graces back again, but they're going to have to do a lot to prove themselves.
I think it would need to be pretty substantial at this point.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, for sure. You know, the fact that they hired folks like Mark Russell at all or Leah Williams at all shows that they understand a more progressive voice is important, but
that's just...
they took five steps back with this.
And the other side of the coin is that that's just marketability.
That's true.
Right? Like, they are basically saying... we didn't realize this ComicsGate thing wasn't going to be marketable for us.
Right.
Whoops.
What's amazing, too, is like they've screwed themselves on both ends now. Because the ComicsGaters are like, you cucks or whatever they say.
Oh, Jesus.
And so like they're getting slammed from that side, too. So they got to do something. I honestly don't. I'm surprised they haven't done anything yet. They did cancel all of their Comic-Con at home panels this week. But moving on, since we're at the near end of the month here, Marvel and DC Comics released their full solicitations for October releases. Customary for Marvel, they teased the hell out of what's coming out in October long before the full solicitations came out. So there isn't a ton of surprises.
Yeah, nothing substantial here, really.
The only thing that shocked me when I was putting the solicitations together was there's a big Spider-Man thing going on involving Kindred.
Sins Rising.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which actually starts this week. Yeah.
We're actually in the prelude for that this week, right? I saw that they are happy enough with Taboo of the Black Eyed Peas Werewolf by Night series that he was on their Comic-Con at Home panel.
He was.
To plug Werewolf by Night and the new Black Eyed Peas album.
That was awkward, man.
Yeah.
I think he thought it was live because he like... his energy was like, oh, wait, and also, you guys should watch. And it was like, no, wait, this is pre-recorded. That's not going to fly, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually covered that, and it was a little cringy.
The only other thing here that folks don't know, I mean, there's King in Black, Fantastic Four is continuing, Captain Marvel's continuing, those sorts of things we've already talked about. Champions number one, written by Evel Ewing with art by Simone DeMayo, is due.
Yeah,
that's still
it's
coming
be a
out.
Mini,
it's
though.
Been it's been repositioned into a mini, right?
Yeah.
It was originally going to be that Outlawed event. I think you can tell in some books that are coming out right now that they were building that, and then it kind of got dismantled, which is unfortunate. But I'm pretty hot on this X of Swords, Ten of Swords.
Yes, they hyped the hell out of that last week, which we already talked about. And yeah, it's most like basically the first half will be done by the end of October.
Yeah.
Because it's like, what, 22 chapters? And there's like 11 chapters or 13 chapters in October.
Yes, yes. And then they've repositioned some books that were due, including X-Factor, to be out post-October because the whole event got shifted. But Jordan White actually took to Twitter and answered a bunch of questions he would normally answer at the convention about those sorts of things and said, rest assured, that stuff's also coming out.
Yep, for sure. Oh, and guess what? Your favorite book, Spider-Man, by J.J. and Henry Abrams, is coming out. The final fifth issue. It only took 2 years. No, that's not 2 years. It's about a year, right? 5 issues in a year.
Huh, yeah. That's crazy. I mean, that's the normal pace for comics. I don't know what you're confused about.
Oh, boy. Yeah, and so anyway, in DC's solicitations, there's a pretty cool interview with Tom King, who we just spoke about, and Jorge Fornes. They talk a little bit about Rorschach. It's worth a look. He has a very definitive definition of what Rorschach means and what other creators have done with him. It kind of helps understand where he's coming from. I think it shows he might be able to pull it off, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Dark Knight Death's Metal is still going to be going on into October. It's actually going all the way through December, right?
Anything that is here to talk about is Batman related. They've got Batman 100 coming up, Joker War Fallout, Death Metal Robin King. Yeah. Rorschach is teased to have Batman in it as well. Sean Gordon Murphy is doing his shit.
Robin King is going to be drawn by Riley Rossmo. That's going to be
pretty cool. That's very cool. Riley's very stylized in a way that I like very much.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've also got the new American Vampire series. American Vampire 1976 is coming, as well as the conclusion of Wonder Woman Dead Earth.
Right. Snyder's been talking about that coming back for like 5 years.
Yeah. I wonder if it took some time to convince people to bite on it, or if he just got wrapped up in, you know,
events.
I don't know. Any number of things. Events. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say that there's one cover here where it says, the mirror is hunting Gotham's heroes, and it is just the cover for Kraven's Last Hunt.
Oh, really?
Like, that's funny. Someone sitting in this character, the mirror, is sitting in a fancy red chair, and they've got the masks of all of the heroes behind them, mounted behind them.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah. I feel like I've seen that before.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just a nitpick.
It's an homage, man.
Just a nitpick, neither here nor there. If you like Snyder, if you like Greg Capullo, they've got that stuff coming for the next couple of months, and then I hope DC's going to pivot pretty hard after that.
Yeah, I'd like to see something different.
Yeah, but...
But maybe fans don't want to see something different, though, because DC revealed this week that Dark Knight's Death Metal #1 is going to get a second printing, and Deceased is getting a third printing. It's getting more printings than the
Tom, event. And Tom Taylor is teasing another DC project, which by all accounts appears to be a Batman project, though we don't know right now.
Right. So. Right. I'm all for Tom Taylor. I'm just shocked how much Deceased is selling.
Yeah.
A crude man might say it's Marvel Zombies with DC Comics, but I wouldn't say that. but moving on, Skybound and Image Comics had their expo last week, just when we were recording the show, actually, last weekend, and they revealed they're coming out with Summoner's War Legacy, a new comic series, in working with Come to Us, a gaming company that, I don't know, do you play Summoner's War?
I do not.
Yeah, neither do I. So I just thought it was interesting that their probably biggest news of the week, of their personal, private convention was that they're doing
a licensed comic.
Yeah.
It's weird. But also, that's Skybound's gig.
Yeah.
They do a lot of board games and other ancillary materials. So maybe that's what they're hyped on right now. I don't know.
Right. And they're like, hey, guess what? We can help you leverage this into a TV show. Let's just do a comic book, you know?
Yeah.
Also, this week, Marvel was. Again, I want to just point out, though, actually, we didn't say this yet, I don't think. Comic-Con at Home. SDCC was supposed to be this week, but now it's Comic-Con at Home all week. Mm-hmm. And yet it seems like Marvel didn't care and just continued to hype and tease things outside of the panels.
Yeah, that's true. And things that we already know about. I don't know. I really did kind of think that they were going to have a bunch of new news.
Yeah.
That's usually what they do at SDCC, but it doesn't seem to be the case this year.
We'll get to that in a second, but I just wanted to say that before I say, you know, they revealed Web of Venom, Empire's End is coming out, where I guess at the tail end of Empire, Null will show up, it appears. Also, they hyped X of Swords a little bit more with some Cable #3 teaser image and a Excalibur #11 teaser image,
mm-hmm.
Which shows that apparently the Eternals are now the High Lords, and Cable will be getting a sword that's called
The Externals.
Oh, sorry, Externals. Yeah. The Light of Galador Sword. I love the it just rolls off the tongue. Light of Galador Sword. A lot of fans were talking about that stuff. I don't. It's such little tidbits. It's hard to really care too much, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me. Also, Marvel released their Marvel's Storyboard show on Marvel.com and YouTube. The first episode features Hugh Jackman and Joe Quesada hanging out. Basically, it's basically only like 15 minutes long, and Hugh Jackman talks about growing up, what he did before being an actor, what did he do when he was Wolverine, and what he's been doing now. I watched it and wrote a little bit of news for aptcomics.com, and hilariously, well, I don't know if it's hilarious, but the biggest news to me in that little piece was he revealed that, and he's never told anyone, that because of the screaming he did as Wolverine, he lost his falsetto for 6 years.
Oh, wow. And he's a notable singer. That's interesting. Yeah.
6 years is a long time.
That is a long time.
I guess because of X1 and X2.
I mean, vocal cords do not repair quickly.
Right. Yeah.
So, even if you have the X gene.
So, I just want to point out, Wolverine literally inhibited his ability to do musicals for 6 years. Thanks a lot, Stan Lee.
All the screaming and none of the healing factor.
That's right. He needed to learn a little bit more. He needed to get in character. method acting. Act. Yes. supposedly there's this thing where the day before Comic-Con starts, there's always some crazy big news that drops, and the IDW president, COO, and publisher said as much when it was revealed by the Hollywood Reporter that he was no longer the COO, publisher, and president of IDW.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly he's stepping down. I say supposedly because it seemed like he was shocked that it happened. Maybe it was just surprising it happened so soon. But supposedly he's going to be kicking off a new creative, launching a new publishing venture. And that's why he's stepping down.
And that's Chris Rial.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Who used to be the editor-in-chief of IDW as well. There's been a kind of a lot of news that I think is related to him, but not necessarily. It's all tangential. IDW lost a lot of money in 2019. They did not pivot very well at the start of the pandemic. They were expecting to be profitable through 2021. And obviously, they don't have complete control over what happened there. They were out a lot of money on various television pilots that they funded. I think that there was a very expensive Lock and Key pilot that they funded through Hulu that was never picked up before it moved to Netflix. And there's been a lot of talk about kind of a hostile board takeover of what IDW has been doing and kind of positioning them to not release original projects anymore and only release licensed projects. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to believe that someone at Chris's level is involved in all of those choices or all of that animosity. So he indicated that he was stepping down sooner than expected.
Right.
And that happened to be very quickly. I think people can infer their own sorts of things after out of that. IDW sales director Judd Myers joined a little over a year ago, like 14 months ago, and has been lifted to a very high position. So it's not like we haven't touched on these things before. It's just that they're finally capitalizing on it.
Right. Yeah. Moving from sales director to publisher is a huge leap, I would think.
Yeah, it is. And I think that we've talked before about this, but I think that that's kind of what the board indicated they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they said that they were going to completely restructure. So this looks like that finally happening. It's maybe a weird time to pull the trigger on it.
Before the convention started? Or
before the convention, and also because things are just so volatile right now.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you said you read an IDW book, and there was a letter from him that was like, it's good to have a comic in your hands, right?
We get issues a little early to review them, and I was reading next week's issues, and Chris Rael has a letter in the back that says, literally, I don't know what next year will bring. All I know for sure right now is it's going to be it's good to be back, he said.
Right.
That adds fuel to the fire that it was very surprising that he was stepped down when he did.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to make the case for is all the signs were there.
Yeah.
Just didn't know when it was going to happen, and this seems to be it.
Yep. For sure. I have a feeling that the now COO, publisher, and president probably wouldn't have run that letter if they knew he was stepping down when he did.
Yeah.
Because that looks kind of funny. Although I have a feeling most fans won't even notice that letter or care. Probably. I mean, how often do we talk about Chris Royale at all? You know.
Right. Right. How often do we talk about Back Matter at all?
That's true too. Yeah. Yeah. Like every single Hill House comic has an interview in there with someone involved with those books. But
I mean, every Conan issue has a short story.
Yeah, that's true.
A multiple chapter story that they're telling that I never read it.
Yeah, neither do I. I don't have the time.
Yeah.
But if you do have the time, you can actually watch all of the Comic-Con at Home panels, even if they've already taken place, because they're all on YouTube now, and there's no sign of when they'll be taken down, so probably you don't even have to rush to watch them this weekend. But yeah, it started on Wednesday, and it's going through Sunday, and we have a little bit of news that's come out of Comic-Con at Home, but not a ton. Probably less than usual from a convention.
Mm-hmm.
At the top of our SDCC news, Donnie Cates announced Crossover, which is the book he's been hyping for a little bit. Image also was hyping it a week or two ago. This is his, what do you call it? Not event event?
Yeah, and anti-event event.
Anti-event event. And he also said...
due in November.
Yes, and he said it's Avengers Endgame, but as Cloverfield.
Uh-huh.
If you go to SDCC's site, you can actually watch him talk about it. He talks about it for like 20 minutes, trying to explain how risky it is, how he doesn't even know even now if it'll be pulled off, if fans will enjoy it. He's teaming up with Jeff Shaw, who he worked on with Thanos, and a few other folks. So basically, are you excited for an event that's not an event?
You know, I hate the idea of Avengers by way of Cloverfield, because I know exactly what he means.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of people could infer what that kind of storytelling means as well. I mean, it is, I was saying to you, it's kind of the hook of like The Boys, which is that right. From a normal mundane perspective, all of this is really scary. Mm-hmm. But I don't ever find that interesting. I was telling you that there's always this layer of artificiality when you're reading a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And when you try to tell a kind of genre-bending, fourth-wall-breaking, whatever it may be, story, the consumer is always aware of that layer of artificiality. The medium gets in the way of the message. It's not like seeing a play where the actors can come off the stage and make that point for you.
Mm-hmm.
So unless they have something, an incredible ace up their sleeve, like one of the crossover issues is going to be released by Marvel or something like that,
oh.
It's not...
It's
not as tangible or as interesting as he's positing that it is. However, I tend to like Donnie's storytelling from issue to issue.
Right. Thor, he's really good at Thor just shocking been
amazing,
you.
But everything else I kind of like. So I will give it a try.
Dude, you need to write a book for Image Comics, because that would blow my mind if issue 2 was published by Marvel, then issue 3 was published by DC or whatever. That'd be the coolest idea. Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, I think Donnie is someone that has the kind of pull to pull something like that off, but the publishers aren't getting along right now.
Right, although, yeah, Marvel and IDW kind of have that thing going with the children's comics,
yeah.
But they don't have anything going with Image.
I just mean that that's the kind of thing that needs to be done to follow up on the promotion.
To really knock the doors off the meta-ness of it.
Right.
Yeah. I watched the panel, and I have to say, I'm not super confident they can pull it off. In part because Cates even himself wasn't super confident. But it's an interesting concept. I just don't know how you pull it off and have it be interesting and not just be another event. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Because if you get into the nitty-gritty of like real life and what we would do if a portal opened up in the sky, it's going to just be like Heroes, that show.
Well,
it's
going to
be like
boring. It is going to be like Heroes. And if you take the horror bend on it, it's just kind of like, I think I even said this to you, it's like, wouldn't Red Skull be scary to see in real life? Which, yes. Mm-hmm. But do you have anything more to say than that?
Right. Yeah, that's the question. If you answer that question, if he can answer that question, Donnie Cates, then they will have a success probably.
Right.
Also, very shocking and surprising news. Oscar Isaac, the actor you may know from such films as Star Wars, is teaming up with Christian Ward and Brian Buccellato for a new graphic novel called Head Wounds Sparrow. Now, when I say team up, that's a bit of a stretch because it's actually a project set up with Legendary Comics, the publisher, and it's essentially, it looks like Oscar Isaac's production company has hired some folks to make a comic out of a script that will likely someday become a movie or TV show.
Yeah.
Honestly, the premise is sort of interesting. If they can pull it off, I think Christian Ward's the right artist for it because he can be so psychedelic and crazy with his visual style, as it's about this this character who had... let me see here.
It says the story is about a cop who has a psychic head wound, yes, which allows him to survive a war between angels, devils, and everything in between.
Mm-hmm. Does that tantalize you?
The only thing I have to say about this is that Oscar Isaac is hot. He's a very good man, and I'll read his comic.
Are you a big Philip K. Dick fan at all?
Yeah, sure.
I was really into him for a little while there, and one book that is yet to be adapted, because almost all of his work has been adapted already to film, is a book called Valis, mm-hmm, which is actually kind of a fascinating real-world meta thing going on. He wrote it in 1981. Basically, he had a head wound and wrote this book in like 3 hours. And it's about reality and going through a door and like what is real. And I don't know why I'm getting Valis vibes from this project. So maybe there's some inspiration there. But that makes me even more interested in Head Wound Sparrow.
Yes. To reiterate, Oscar Isaac is incredibly hot.
Now, it looks also like he's going to be in the comic. Like
he's on the cover. Face. The Christian Ward rendering of him is also gorgeous.
So
real psychedelic, hot daddy vibes. I know he's not actually a dad. He could be my dad.
He could.
Yeah.
You should ask your dad if that's the case.
Well, I want him to be my daddy.
Oh, okay. It's
different. Yeah, it's gotcha. Different.
Probably the biggest news of the Comic-Con at Home this week is the Eisner Award winners, which was announced Friday night. And should we preface to say there was some controversy around the Eisners this year?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that there are some questions about the validity. They did an online voting system this year, which was compromised. We didn't ever really talk about this, I don't think. Voting process was compromised. A lot of people expected them to skip a year or to relaunch or to recalculate votes because it's impossible to tell the validity of those votes as well as the number of those votes. But they moved forward. They went ahead and awarded winners.
Yeah,
those nominations. So
it's very wishy-washy. There wasn't enough reporting done, I don't think, to really figure out what they did to rectify it.
Yeah, and the Eisners is such a weird, loosely coordinated thing anyway.
Yeah,
that it may have been hard to track down that story, but it is fair to say that folks have reason to question this. I will say I absolutely commend NOLA, the editor-in-chief of Women Write About Comics. They won the best comics-related or periodical journalism category for womenwriteaboutcomics.com. And she wrote a really fantastic letter about not accepting the award, questioning the validity, how it positions their detractors to take advantage of what has happened with the Eisners this year. She posted that on Twitter, and it's also available on their website, I believe.
Yeah, no, it's good that they took that stand, I think, considering it seems... I mean, let's be honest. Eisners in general are kind of like a popularity contest.
Right.
I saw it first. I kind of never was that interested in it, but last year when I covered it live... It felt like such a like popularity. I mean, Tom King won like 6 Eisners.
Yeah. I mean, so they have a kind of hybrid model where judges nominate and also award the winners, but also they take a vote from the Eisners committee.
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing. I will say that it was very nice to see some very deserved winners this year, including Women Write About Comics. But
yeah.
Mariko Tamaki won Best Writer. Laura Dean Keeps Breaking Up With Me, which was the best thing I read last year, also won Best Publication for Teens. It was very good to see Mariko get some very deserved wins. Chip Zdarsky won Best Digital Comic for Afterlift. That's a Comixology original. And I think that may be the first award-winning Comixology original. Bitter Root was robbed last year and won Best Continuing Series this year, so that's fantastic. Fantagraphics won for Our Favorite Thing Is My Favorite Thing Is Monsters, which is a kind of meta story sequel to My Favorite Thing Is Monsters that I think is very cool. Little Bird by Darcy Van Poelgeest and Ian Bertram won Best Limited Series, and that is the debut comic for Darcy Van Poelgeest. So you were saying off the air that you think that that's going to completely change Darcy's career trajectory, and I agree.
Yeah, I've seen Darcy do some work here and there, but they haven't reached that like higher level that you might see like with someone like Tom Taylor.
Right. So some very deserved winners here.
Yeah, and congratulations to Stan Sakai. He made it into the Eisner Hall of Fame, as well as won Best Letter of the Year.
Oh, yeah.
Twofer. And there was also an archival, the best archival collection was of his. The Stan Sakai's Usagi Yojimbo, the Complete Grass Cutter Artist Select from IDW, also won. So he basically won three times.
Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah. I did see that there was a little bit of controversy. Gao Tanabe's H.P. Lovecraft's At the Mountains of Madness won a manga award, and Zach Davison translated that to English. And the presenter of the award did not say Zach Davison's name.
Yeah, the show was definitely a little clunky. It was a little clunky live, too, but I was surprised that they flubbed some names or forgot to say things and didn't go back and correct it.
Right.
I guess it shows they probably made it really fast and probably only a couple days ago.
Yeah, but Zach tweeted that he was upset about that on Twitter, and I think that's entirely valid. You know, he said, they didn't say my name, it's right there on the cover, and that sucks.
I know nobody cares except for me, but if you were, you know, if this was like the Super Bowl, Dark Horse won with 5 wins. And coming up second was Image Comics with 4 wins. Drawn in Quarterly and First and Second won 3 each, and Fantagraphics and IDW came in with 2 each.
Who do we know who the winningest creator was?
Well, we know, I shouldn't say this because it's kind of sad. What's his name? Stoko? Mm. He was nominated the most.
Yeah, correct.
Didn't win any.
Yeah, and that's a bummer.
Which stinks.
I like his work a lot.
What was your question? Do we know what?
Who the winningest creator was, who won the most. And I think it might be Mariko Tamaki.
Yeah, because
we would have to check.
Yeah. Because of she got Best Writer, but also, well, the artist won for Laura Dean, right?
Right. But I think... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Dave Stewart won for Best Coloring.
Yeah.
You know what? All the nominees won, because just being nominated is enough.
Sure, that's true.
Okay, let's get through some very minor, unimportant also news.
Yeah, hit it.
So, yeah, Marvel's next big thing, which is typically the biggest panel of every big con. They talked about She-Hulk. They talked about Empire, Spider-Man, Werewolf by Night. There's an interesting bit of quotes from one of our articles. If you go to our website, there's some interesting things Al Ewing said about She-Hulk. Teeny Howard said X of Swords is very weird. Teeny Howard also said, she didn't say it, but it sounds a lot like it's the X of Swords event is a lot of her. It's her in this event. And she says she's been working closely with Hickman and senior editor-in-chief Jordan White. So there's some interesting tidbits about that. Also from the con, Marvel's 616 had a pretty interesting panel. This is a new docu-series on Disney Plus. Each episode, I think there's 6 or 8 episodes, is a self-contained episode. One focuses on women in comics. Another is about characters that are probably forgotten. I was skeptical about it at first, but after watching the panel, I'm pretty psyched for it. And then finally, DC Comics revealed Endless Winter is coming December 2020. And Forrest, what do you think Endless Summer, or sorry, Winter will be about?
I saw some speculation that this is going to be a full integration of the Sandman universe into DC.
Yeah.
If that's true, I'm very excited.
It's about time.
And cautious because of what they've done to Watchmen.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's it for news. In our next segment, our top books of the week. We're going to talk about our top 2 favorite comics out this week.
Mm-hmm.
First, what was your second favorite book of the week?
My second favorite book of the week was Hellions number 2, written by Zeb Wells with art by Steven Segovia. I mostly like this issue because of Nanny. Mm-hmm. It's just an incredibly funny, dark, satirical take on the X-Men to be telling this story. There's a lot of brashness and harshness to it. You know, characters like Havoc and Psylocke and Nanny and Orphan Maker and the others on the team, they swear a lot more than mm-hmm. you normally see in Marvel Comics, which I think is very good tonality-wise. The mm-hmm. story is moving forward in an interesting way, and that's because of the debut of Madeline Pryor, which I don't think is really a spoiler at this point, considering she's been on the covers. Yeah, but it was very good to see Zeb introduce her in a interesting and yet mysterious kind of way. So mm-hmm. it's a very intriguing and evocative story. It's very funny and balances that darkness pretty well. I think it's the most I've liked issues 1 to 2 of a Dawn of X book.
Oh, that first issue was so good.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And there's something that happens at the beginning of this issue that is just like, whoa, okay. Mm-hmm. Zeb has some free reign here in a way that I appreciate.
What are Nanny's powers?
Is a nanny.
Is that it?
I'm not sure. I think her whole deal is being able to calm down other people. Like, she calms down Orphan Maker.
I see.
I don't know.
I should look this up. Here we go. Nanny's mutant power is a type of low-level telepathy mind control, which she enhances by projecting a chemical pixie dust at her victims.
Yeah. And for people that don't know, she's an egg. She's a metal egg with lipstick and small red boots and small
so
red gloves.
So outrageous.
And she gets flipped on her face during this issue, and they spend an entire page of her being like, what's going on? Someone flip Nanny over. That kind of stuff. It's very funny.
Oh, she can regress the bodies of adult mutants to those of children.
Huh.
Wild.
Yeah. So they're playing around with this. They're playing around with Mr. Sinister's history as well. There's an implication in one of those data pages that Mr. Sinister is, like, for the first time really hanging out with the X-Men and kind of realizing why the X-Men have won every time and finding ways to exploit that for himself. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Second favorite book of the week was a digital first, Harley Quinn, Black and White and Red, number 5. Riley Rossmo writes and draws the issue. Riley Rossmo, do I have to say anything else?
One of my favorites.
It's a really cool take on Harley in that it's basically her as a baby. Sorry, not as a baby, as a sperm, we see her as, meeting the egg, all the way up to her death. And it kind of recaps her history for a time, but then it goes beyond what we know. Spoiler, she opens a hamburger chain, but instead of hamburger, she uses Starro meat. So it's outrageous. It's funny. It's fun. Visually amazing. This 14-part digital first series has just been amazing all the way through. I've liked every single issue. And number 5 is well worth a look.
Cool.
What was your favorite book?
My favorite book was Wind, number 2, written by James Tynion IV. Does he prefer James Tynion 4? Do we know?
When we interviewed him on the show last, he said, whatever you want.
Okay.
So.
And then the art is by Michael Dialnes. This is the second issue of Wind, released by Boom. It was originally positioned as a graphic novel, and I will say up front again that you can see the seams in this story.
Yeah.
It feels like the next page of a graphic novel, not necessarily issue-based episodic storytelling. And I feel like the beginning of the issue is a little bit rough because of that. But also, I think that they've done a very good job of making the ends of the issues, which are oversized. I think this one's about 50 pages, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
The ends of the issues, you can see why they split the book up this way. Mm-hmm. Because they've been able to nail these very interesting, dark and humorous and sad cliffhangers throughout the story, kind of moving through these different acts. It's a beautiful book. I think I said last time that it reminds me very much of Netflix's Hilda, in that it is this light, wonderful, fantastical world with a dark side.
Yeah.
And they're starting to explore that. They're starting to explore kind of the segregation that's happening here. It's a little on the nose, but through the lens of children that are written authentically, it's very engaging and emotive. It also maps to, or is meant to be parallel to, a queer experience especially because some of the characters are queer. And that has got its hooks in me as well, because it's just a nice, compassionate, and yet realistic storytelling. These characters aren't driven by their trauma, which is often a problem with queer storytelling, but they experience trauma. They experience other problems that real people, real queer people experience in their lives. Mm-hmm. And they kind of have to take that all in stride while a king's secret police moves through a city trying to destroy all magic. So yeah. It's very well done. I like the story quite a bit. I don't love that it's issue by issue. I think I would be even warmer on this if it were an entire graphic novel that I just got to sit down and read. But yeah. But maybe the anticipation is okay.
Yeah, when I was reviewing it, I was like, okay, we're finally getting to the adventure part by the end of this issue.
Yeah.
Not that it's bad or anything. And when I was writing the review, I also think, I think a lot of people, especially younger people who pick this up, will see themselves in some of these characters. And I think it could be therapeutic even for some because they can relate to the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what story they can't relate to?
What's that?
Is Empire X-Men number one with my favorite comic of the week, written by Jonathan Hickman, Teeny Howard, with art by Matteo Bufagni. Spoilers, folks. It's not X-Men versus the bad guys in Empire. No, it's X-Men versus zombies versus the bad guys in Empire. Yeah, that's right. It's just bonkers. This issue introduces the fact that the mutants that died in Genosha. They all rise from the dead. And this is happening while the plant creatures from Empire are landing on Earth, preparing to take over. And it also introduces X-Corp, which is run by Angel, and some other characters are on the team, like Magic, which are all expertly written, and that kind of politics and the dynamics between them is very cool. But then you don't realize until the end of the comic that zombie mutants is very bad because they can go through gates. So
yeah, that's a good
point. Last couple pages...
You mean
pages,
the gates to Krakoa.
Yes,
not
exactly.
That they have the ability to open doors for everyone.
No. Oh my god, that would be bad too in regular zombie movies.
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of I totally spoiled it, but it kind of took me by surprise because Angel's like, oh shit, we got to close this gate right now, and Multiple Man is like rushing to pluck all these weeds that have stopped the gate from, I don't know, working or something, so that they can like seal it up before the rush of zombies goes to Krakoa and kills everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a four-part tie-in series, but it doesn't feel like you have to read Empire to get it. You just got to know that there are plant aliens that are a problem for the mutants right now. It continues on a lot of the drama on Krakoa. Xavier shows up, other characters is like that. So I think it's a must-read for X-Men fans, and it doesn't feel like a forced tie-in. I think that was one of the biggest takeaways I had when I was reading it.
Yeah, I do think that they executed on it being a natural story to tell during Empire very well.
Right. So check that out. In our next segment, Top Books for Next Week, we're going to pick our top number one book we're looking forward to out next week. I'm going to go first, please, and thank you. Hedra by Jesse Lonergan. I've never heard of this creator. Didn't even know Hedra was coming out until I saw Image Comics' release schedule. This is a wordless comic. It is all just images and insanely well-done layout design. There are some panels that, pages that have 36 panels to them. And the way the layouts kind of interact with each other, panels interact with each other, literally the gutters become part of the story in between panels. It's a sci-fi story about... In the very first page, we find out that Earth dropped a nuclear bomb and then dropped a ton more, and we're screwed. And it follows an astronaut who goes out to outer space and tries to kind of save the world. And there are sci-fi aliens and stuff like that happen in the book. And there's a deeper meaning in there about, you know, war and annihilating ourselves, and but also the like joys of discovery. And you get that not only from the story, but the visual storytelling. And I was just blown away by how beautiful the book is laid out and how there's a story within a story within a story within a story within all the panels.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I said this, but I already read it.
Oh, yeah, it was apparent.
Yeah. So, what is your most anticipated book?
My most anticipated book is Lost Soldiers Number 1, written by Alice Cott, one of my favorite writers, with art by Luca Casalinguida and Heather Moore. Alice said that this is a kind of intergenerational war story, and war stories aren't normally my thing. You know, I don't get down on the Tom Clancy, Jack Reacher type stuff very often. Mm-hmm. But this is about intergenerational trauma and violence and emotions and patriotism and the unpacking of patriotism and what it does to soldiers in particular. It's about a group of soldiers who have been in one war and are trying to avoid a collision course with another war or being enlisted in another war. Alice said that it's actually kind of similar to Spike Lee's The Five Bloods, which just came out. I haven't seen that yet, but I've heard very good things about it. So I'm pretty excited. I think Alice is a fantastic writer, one who's not afraid of showing the nitty-gritty, realistic parts of the human experience. But it never feels like it's being done for shock value. It feels like it's always worthwhile, with a fantastic art team attached as well.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one too. I'm also not like super into war stuff. I mean, one of the reasons why I can't get into Punisher a lot of times is because he's in Vietnam.
Sure.
Moving on, in our next segment, Judging by the Cover Junior, we pick our favorite cover art gracing a book out next week. What is your favorite cover art out next week?
My favorite cover art is Plunge Number 5, cover art by Jeremy Wilson. This features the crew of Plunge. They are cloaked in these red monochromatic jumpsuits. The painterly white fur is dancing off of their necklines, and they are surrounded by these horrific kind of pixelated grisly monsters pouring out of doors, parasites swarming above their heads. It goes from black to white down at the bottom. It's just very well done, and I don't think we've said, I really love the title treatment for Plunge.
No, I don't think we
have.
The
logo for the series is fantastic, with the tentacle in the G.
Yes, so, it's subtle, so you don't necessarily notice it right away.
Yeah. This is just a good, spooky, and monochromatic cover, which I'm drawn to often.
I feel like I picked the opposite cover of the week. I picked DC Cybernetic Summer Number 1 by Dan Mora. It's just super fun. It's a bunch of the DC characters in a Jeep that's clearly one of the Metal Men, or maybe a couple of the Metal Men, making the Jeep. Batman's driving. Wonder Woman and Harley are in the rooftop. They're going through the rooftop, just sort of like enjoying the breeze. You've got the Batman, like, what is it? The big armor that Capullo and Snyder put together years ago. And then also Cyborg Superman flying. They're all kind of going sort of towards us, but off to the side as well. It's just a lot of cool stuff to look at all on one cover. It's laid out really well too. So your eye kind of moves from the top down to the bottom, kind of on a circular curve from right to left, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so much to take in. And you know what? I crave that positivity in almost everything I read, at least a couple things every week. And this has given that to me.
Yeah, it looks fun. It is also looks like a very fun story to read, this anthology type series.
Yeah. I'm really pumped for a lot of the stories in there. I think Steve Orlando's doing possibly one of his last Apollo and Midnighter stories in there.
Cool.
That's going to be a must read for me.
Yeah.
Among others. Max Bemis, Greg Smallwood. I mean, did you just hear what I said? Max Bemis and Greg Smallwood? Like what?
Yeah, I guess.
Anyway, in our last segment, Jill Carter from Kamikaze, she's a manager over at Kamikaze, a comic shop in Somerville, Mass., that also won the Eisner Award for Best Shop in 2017, is going to join us to talk about how they've set up the shop to, you know, deal with the pandemic, but also going forward, what will be happening. It's a very informative and interesting interview, I have to say.
Yep. Wear your mask.
Enjoy. So on with us is Jill Carter, a manager at Kamikaze, the comic book shop on 407 Highland Ave, Somerville, Mass. Jill has been working in comics for 10 years and have been at Kamikaze for 6. Thanks so much for joining us, Jill.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm very delighted to be here.
So first of all, could you talk a little bit about the store and what you offer and what it takes to win an Eisner?
Yeah. That's some big questions. So we specialize in a lot of different things. We have new comics and graphic novels and a subscription service to go with that. But we also do a lot of back issues, anywhere from just like $2 bins and grab bags to like super premium first appearances and key issues for like the big collector market. We have supplies for how to store those comics and kind of like archival situations. We also do, you know, gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and all of the, bells and whistles and rickety-rackety that goes with that. Gaming, we have tons of vintage toys. We have like showcases that display all of those. And I think with all of that, with all of the things that we do offer just in terms of merchandise, I think what made the Eisner just a reality and something attainable for us to win as an award is our community events and our connection with like just our clientele, the fact that we don't really have like an age range specifically or, a demographic. We're really trying to appeal to everybody and make it a welcome place for everybody. And, we had before, COVID, we had an event every single night of the week, whether it was a game night, we had three different book clubs. We would do comedy shows and creator signings and things like that on the weekends. We had a lot of, we have like a longstanding relationship with Boston Partners in Education, and we do a lot of fundraiser events every year for that, including like a big cookie bake-off, which was very fun and, raises a lot of money for Boston Partners, which like helps like promote like literacy in Boston public schools. And another benefit for that organization that we do every year is our comic shop All Stars, which is a big trivia event where we invite people from other shops and just like people in the comics industry, like around Greater Boston area, around Massachusetts, and it's like a charity event where we all kind of like get together, we raise money. The table fees go to Boston Partners, and we just kind of get together, like hang out with, folks in our industry, catch up and also just kind of flex on each other with a, with a big trivia tournament. And that's always really fun. And one of the things that we were, very heartbroken not to be able to do this year, not only for the fundraiser, but also just, getting together with other shops. We like to talk to other shops, maintain really good relationships with them. We are kind of all in it together when it comes to this industry. It can be kind of a volatile one. And I don't know, we just want to know that everybody's okay, see what everybody's doing. We're always trying to be better at what we do. And you're not going to know that just kind of like focusing on your own stuff. You really have to go and talk to other people.
Erica Henderson is a notable creator that pops into the shop quite a bit, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I see her, quite a bit. I think she moved into the kind of Davis Square area not too long ago, so I see her a little bit more. But she's played on some All-Stars teams, I think with Hub Comics, another Somerville shop. She's definitely in the mix. She's been a guest at our annual Ladies Con, one day convention that we do every year. So yeah. And she's just a tremendous talent and a very cool person.
Nice. Yeah. I'm really psyched for Henderson's Dracula motherfucker.
Oh yeah.
I just love the title. Like, I just want to say it every time I see the comic come up.
Yeah. It's I'm very excited for that too. Just, I love Halloween also. I think it's coming around, the October time. I'm very stoked for that.
So Somerville is officially closed non-essential business around, I think it was March 20th. Did you anticipate that would happen? And if so, how did you prepare?
It was definitely on the table as something that could happen. And in the weeks leading up, we had plans A, B, C, D, and E for, what we were going to do. And we eventually kind of deployed all of those plans at different times, depending on, to what degree we could be open and have staff, to what degree that was safe, to what degree we were all comfortable, doing various things. So, I mean, like, one of the things, like, we prepared for was just if we're shut down completely, like, nobody in the building, which was, I think it was just, like, owners allowed in the building there for a while. So we moved as a staff, like, we had meetings over Zoom. People, like, took merchandise home to, like, price, like, toys and back issues.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we wanted to keep everybody on the payroll. We wanted to keep everybody, like, in touch and, you know, like, just here's, we have some things to do, like, and, you know, we did videos, on, like, Instagram and Facebook, for just recommendations. Before we had to shut down completely, I went around to, like, the showcases and bookshelves and just took a million pictures, just so that we could keep posting on social media and kind of, you know, be sort of like a, you know, like a bright spot or just like something nice to see in your feed. You know, just some collectible toys or just like, you know, fun Transformers or here's some back issues just to kind of be that bright spot and be kind of a consistent, you know, I don't know, some source of like levity and relaxation. Cause that's really what we do. We're like right. a hobby mm-hmm. joint. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just trying to help people deal with, you know, what's going on. And if that means like, you're going to get a million miniatures to paint, like I'm going to tell you what we have. Like if you need to stock up on, you know, books for like homeschooling your kids, I've got a ton of science books, like things like that.
Yeah. Keep the community going too.
Yeah. We were trying to, you know, like keep our, you know, the people that love to frequent our shop, we were trying to keep them engaged and let them know what they could do if they wanted to support us. You know, a lot of people wanted to like buy like gift cards and stuff, but that was not the move. What we do best is recommend books and, you know, talk about games we love and, you know, like show people new things they've never seen before. So that's really what we wanted to do. We wanted to keep doing the things that we're good at and that we love and care about. So yeah, we had, you know, the videos, we had an online store. We have a pretty robust like eBay store as well. We've had mm-hmm. that for years. And that really, you know, people were, you know, buying stuff on eBay during this time. And we were doing mail order. And, you know, we had like an owner just like come in and like pack up orders and, you know, ship them out when none of us like as a staff could really like be in there when it wasn't safe. It was maybe just like one person packing stuff up, shipping it out, and behind the scenes, like over email, over Zoom, we were like, I was personal shopping the shelves from home, like making recommendation lists for people who I need to stock up on some books. Like, you know, my kid likes this, this, and this. Scared of rabbits, loves some dragons. So it was like, you know, making like lists like that for people, and based on what we have in the shop. You know, because like orders shut down for a while. We couldn't get new comics in. Like that was, you know, that was not happening. But we have a lot of stuff. We're a 3,000 square feet shop. We've got the stuff. so we were really trying to like help people get what they needed. And the communication of my staff and like the willingness of everyone to just like kind of pivot and, you know, be open and flexible in all of this was utterly astounding. I love them so much. And it really just like kept me sane to like have a purpose, have something to do, when things really felt uncertain and really all over the place.
So you mentioned mail order. Did you also shift to doing curbside pickup, and how did customers get in touch with you for what they wanted? Obviously some have pull lists, but how did that whole process seem to go, or how is it going?
Well, we started offering, you know, curbside pickup service before the shutdown, just for people who didn't, you know, like weren't feeling comfortable. You know, it was a very strange time, you know, in that like March area when things were not quite shut down, but, you know, people were very like concerned and we were concerned. So it was something that we kind of just started offering, is like, sure, like, you know, just give us a call or, you know, email here and we'll, you know, bring it out to you. We'll take a credit card over the phone. As it really became clear that this was a service that we would really need to rely on and promote, like we developed, you know, language and policies and like invoice systems for making that go smoothly. and, you know, scheduling people in like 15-minute increments, like you have an appointment to pick up. So there wouldn't be like clustering around the door, like when we were really trying to like limit contact with folks. And just, you know, that those measures of control just benefit us as a staff, just so that everyone is, they know what to do. They know what needs to go out, like who's on the phone, you know, whose order is this? Everybody knows what's going on and it's not chaotic. That's really what we wanted to do, just, you know, build a system and, you know, make sure that, you know, everybody knows how to do it and everyone can get what they need just safely and as quickly as possible.
Somerville started opening up shops. What was it, like June 13th or something? June 18th?
Yeah. So we opened up June 15th.
Okay.
And I only remember that like for sure because it was my birthday.
Happy birthday!
Woo! Yes. It was very interesting. We, as a staff, as management, and like with the owners, we had lots of conversations about how we wanted to do that. And like what kind of, you know, policies and protocols did we want to have in place? We made a lot of really great signage. Like Tom is our main like sign guy and events coordinator, and he is great with the graphics. So we had like signs about like, if you want to come in, like you need to, you know, wear a mask, wear it properly. We have hand sanitizer right at the door. There's someone, you know, going to greet you right there at the door and kind of tell you what's up, make sure that you know what's expected. You know, there's no like masks coming down over the nose. Like you use the hand sanitizer, you know, you keep your distance, like give everybody their space. And it's a lot. That's a lot to like ask of people sometimes.
Yeah.
But you know what? They're kind of like simple rules that are extremely important. So we're really taking it seriously.
Saving lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a really great, like, you know, response from our community. Like people like feel comfortable coming in when they see like the giant bottle of hand sanitizer. And we're always just like cleaning stuff and wiping it down all the time anyway, because it's a big dusty joint full of toys. So we've gotten some good responses on how we've been handling it. And that feels really good it's a lot of conversations and a lot of, you know, concerns like we have as like individuals and as a business. And like, how do we make this work? How do we stay in control of the situation and make sure everybody knows that we're trying our absolute best to be safe?
How was the foot traffic when you guys opened?
We had like really more than I expected, but like we were legally allowed to have about 24 people in the building. You know, it's like 8 people per square feet. We're allowing 15 people in through the door, and we have like a counter, and it's like rudimentary. It's like we have 15 dice in a jar, and like one goes in when a person, you know, walks in through the door. So anybody on staff can like just walk by that front table and see like, you know, like where we're at, how many people are here, how close are we to, like, we're keeping it at like 15, because even though we're a big place and we've rearranged like, you know, like bins and shelving and like fixtures in the store to make it like more open up near the front and like plenty of pathways for people to like, you know, take a step left if someone's coming your way, that kind of thing. You can feel it, you know, when there's like 10, 15 people in the shop and everybody's just kind of browsing around because that's the kind of place we are.
Right.
But we had like just a really great like response. We were, you know, busy all day for a week, just people popping in, people just happy to come and see us again. People, you know, wanting to just like, you know, shop for some big things, shop for some small things, you know, just refill their reading pile. Cause you know, some folks are like still at home. They're not out doing the same things they used to be doing. So they're again, getting into board games, painting miniatures, you know, starting a new graphic novel series. So yeah, it was pretty good. Some drop off in the second week, which is what we expected. But it's been pretty like solid throughout. And I don't know, I'm just really impressed and grateful for our community for you know, coming out, people are maintaining their subscriptions. They want to read new comics. You know, folks just really want some measure of like normalcy, and, you know, we can be that like escape route for just, you can come in here and look at some California raisins and kind of like, you know, forget what's going on for just like a second. Like, that's okay. That's okay to do. So we want it to be like that kind of joint for people.
So the pandemic has also, and kind of unfortunately, been accentuated by a change in direct distribution too. Can you tell us a little about your thoughts on DC's move away from Diamond and what it means for comic stores like you guys?
It has been, and I'm just a delicate professional, it has been challenging.
Sure.
Just to say the least. It's kind of on top of everything else. It kind of feels just like, man, this doesn't quite feel necessary. One of the things that I think our shop benefits from is a diversification of supply lines, and we order from a lot of different distributors anyway. So when DC like pulled out of Diamond and it was like, okay, so you got to order your comics from here and then your graphic novels from here, we already had an account with Random House. Like, so that was like no sweat. So yeah, like we've got account, and you know, the same is true for like, you know, gaming. We try to, you know, we're trying to like get what our customers want, what we think is cool. Just, we want to have like the most diverse merchandise as possible, just in terms of like what like age ranges and interests and everything that we can offer. We want to be able to get our hands on it. Right. So that was like, it was just like opening up another account. There have been some like challenges and hiccups, and I want to like just shout out Alex, who is our subscriptions manager, who largely deals with like that end of it. He's been on top of it like this entire time. Even when it kind of seems like they're overwhelmed on the other end, that's understandable. You know, it's a big change for everybody to make. So I think we're still kind of like working it out. And again, like we're working with other like comic shops in the area and asking them, you know, like, what are your thoughts? What are your plans? Like, how do we help each other in this? So, I don't know. I feel confident that we're going to, you know, keep getting comics for our subscribers and, you know, do what we can to make it happen for them.
Do you think that DC's comics being delivered on Tuesdays and the rest of the publishers coming on Wednesdays makes any like tangible difference?
Not really. It's like a Tuesday release date, right?
Right.
They're certainly not being delivered on Tuesdays.
Okay.
It's been a couple of different days, just for the record.
Okay.
And right now, you know, like shipping is a little all over the place. I think everybody is kind of is feeling that. But I don't know if it makes too much of a difference. It's helpful to get those things like as early as possible, just to process them, especially since we have to process DC Comics in an entirely different way now. So like maybe having an extra day, I don't know, like for us, it all shakes out on Tuesday as we get things into boxes for subscribers. And, you know, we're taking pictures for like a newsletter and for our, you know, new comic book day posts and stuff like that. I'm like letting all the new comic book day posts, like those, you know, are Wednesday as far as I'm concerned. Like, I haven't really changed my, I have a social media schedule, and things that I need to do on certain days. So that really hasn't changed for me. And, you know, we'll put stuff out on Tuesday, and if we sell it, that's cool.
Yeah. New comic book day has shifted, hasn't it? It's now like Tuesday, Wednesday. Also, DC releases a new book every Friday digitally. Soon every day will be new comic book day.
I don't understand what's hard to understand about that.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, every day can be new comic book day. Like, come and see us every day. Like, I'll show you something new. You're not going to run out of something new to read, for sure.
I still remember Newsarama, or now it's Games Radar, they posted an interesting interview with a bunch of comic shop owners, and a lot of them were furious over DC doing this, in part because I guess shipping rates can go up substantially. But it sounds like it hasn't been so bad for you guys.
It's like something we're monitoring. It's still like early days. We've gotten like, you know, three shipments so far. And it's really easy to get like really huffy and puffy about something being different. But I don't know, like I've said before, this is like, it's a volatile market. It's a volatile industry. The mantra so far has been every day is a new day. take that as you will, trying to be as positive as possible. Because at the end of the day, it's the industry that I love, but it's also, you know, we're working in comics and toys and, you know, when there's, you know, if there's, you know, bigger fish and all that. And we're just going to try our best to, you know, to get stuff to our customers. Like that's, you know, we're trying to engage with our community. We're trying to like talk about stories we love with the people, like in our neighborhood and, you know, visitors who just come to see us cause they've heard about us. I don't really think, the melting down on the internet is a super good look. but that's maybe just my like, you know, managerial social media, you know, kind of like branding. It's just like, you know what, we're gonna high road them, and I don't know, we're just trying to be as graceful and professional as possible at all times.
So in that same vein, Bad Idea is positioning a world where comics are exclusive to LCSs and even limited there. Do you think a kind of forced exclusivity model is good for comic shops, or does a broader promotion and availability bring people in more?
I don't know. I mean, I think making comics and, you know, like making comics as accessible as they possibly can be is good. Like new readers are good. We're getting, you know, new customers who have never stepped foot in a comic shop before, have never read something before, don't know or think that they can find something for them, are coming in like every day just being like, hey, you know, comics are the mainstream now. It's not esoteric. It's not there are no gatekeepers at our joint. Everybody's welcome, and just tell us what you like and we'll find you something. So I mean, if you like, you know, see something like in a Walmart or on a newsstand or on the side of the road, for instance, and it, you know, sparks your interest and you want to seek out a shop dedicated to those things, I think the people will come to us because we are well lit, we're clean, we're friendly. We know what we're talking about. We can give you recommendations based on what we love, based on what you like. It's we can, you know, do that. Hey, I'm looking for this book that came out 8 to 10 years ago. It had a red cover. There was a dog. That's my favorite game to play. like we're just like always down. Nice. I think that our the way that we operate, I think, really like makes it so that anyone kind of like wander in and be like, oh, this place is cool. So yeah, I don't know. I think that what people don't understand sometimes about this industry is that, you don't buy the comics, we buy the comics, you know? So as a shop, we need to order like months ahead of time, and kind of anticipate like, you know, what are people going to like, what's going to be hot, like what's going on. So pre-orders and subscriptions, those are the best way to support this industry, the creators in it. Your local comic shop is subscribe, maintain your subscription, pick it up, come see the people in the shop, get to know them. You know, get to know the community that you are in when you are into these, you know, into these things like just collecting or reading casually or whatever. I think it's the pre-orders that that are really your friend in this and help shops out tremendously in their ordering and in their, you know, gauging of interest. You know, let us know if there's something you're excited about. I want to know about it for sure.
What do you think is the biggest win that you've had during this very weird year? And what do you wish you could do differently?
The biggest win, honestly, just like reflecting on the strength of my team and how we, you know, we weren't interested in kind of short-term solutions necessarily. We rolled out, like, you know, our curbside and a delivery program. And that's something that we want to keep because that's like an accessibility issue as much as anything else. So like that was a win. I, you know, have never like worked so closely with a couple of other members of my team, you know, before this, because I was just like always like hopping on Zoom to like talk face to face, when before we would, you know, some folks I would see just like a couple of times, like maybe once a week, maybe a couple of handful times a month. I don't know. We were just really just strengthening like our policies and protocols and coming up with like ideas for like more video programs to do and expanding that. And, you know, what are the ways that we can make this space of the shop more conducive to, you know, make it more open, make it more accessible. Like that's been a win, just like working with my team under like not ideal circumstances and having it be just still rewarding. We're, you know, producing a lot of like great content, even if that content is like just graphics that tell you that you need to have a mask on. Like that just makes me feel very secure, very in control, and willing to do whatever, you know, whatever else, you know, is coming down the way. Like the next like frontier for us is making a, you know, an all-day convention completely virtual. And what does that mean for our shop and the people that organize that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I feel pretty good. Increased accessibility and the response of our community, I think, has been just really galvanizing for us.
Have you noticed any difference in sales for certain publishers or titles during the pandemic?
Definitely a ton of like all ages recommendations is what I was making, and just like big stacks of books for young readers when kids were out of school, and that's a pretty big. We have a whole section of all ages, you know, comics and graphic novels, and that's anything from like board books that, you know, babies can, you know, destroy, or, you know, like, you know, YA novels that are like coming of age and we're dealing with feelings. So it was like, it was a lot of that. And like I said before, like on the homeschooling tip, we have science comics, history comics, you know, things about, we have nonfiction, we have like literature adaptations. I was building like curricula for some parents sometimes, and other times,
wow,
some of the recommendations that I was making were like, hey, my kid just like loves like dumb fart jokes, and I'm like, I got you, like stupid humor, or just, you know, like the easiest like low-hanging fruit jokes, I got that, I got nice. Something for that. So yeah, it was really all ages comics for sure.
Have you tuned into any of the virtual Comic Cons or like Comic Con at home this week? What function does the convention scene serve for like a comic store manager?
For the comic scene in general, when it comes to like this like kind of convention time, that was usually a time that I would, you know, hear a lot of like news would drop and releases would drop, and you would see what people were really getting excited about. You know, for me in my household, it's like Super 7 toys and like what is coming out from there. What kind of, you know, how many creatures from Black Lagoon am I going to get this year? I'm trying to like tune into some panels and this whole time, like through some like closures and more like virtual settings, I've been trying to pay attention to how people, you know, do things like book clubs and trivia and presentations and panels, like all the things like that. Just to see like what works, what seems, you know, weird about it. Like, what can we improve? Like, what do we really want to get out of those things to like use it for our, you know, for our own events. Like, we moved all of our book clubs over to Zoom, and like that was like pretty seamless. But we're really like missing out on other community events that we used to have, and we're trying to like have a big one in an entirely virtual setting. So I think we're still kind of working that out, and I think paying attention to what, you know, Comic-Con at home is doing is really just, I'm like looking for pointers. Like it's really just, you know, I'm like watching like the game tapes, you know.
You're watching the footage, all the plays.
Yes, absolutely.
You're Tom Brady. You need to get that touchdown.
not quite. But yeah. That's, I'm just looking for what works, honestly.
Right. So, Jill, what comics are you reading right now, personally?
Let me see. I've read a ton of great stuff lately. I read a lot of graphic novels. I think Dancing at the Pity Party by Tyler Fader was like one of the last ones I picked up, and Art Life by Catherine Ocelot. You know, Dancing at the Pity Party is a dead mom graphic memoir, and as a member of the Dead Mom Club myself, I'm just like, oh, this is so on brand. So yeah, tons of, you know, just indie graphic novels. I'm always checking out what Silver Sprocket is offering up, because I love, you know, like zine comics, zines, mini comics, like anything like that. So Marie and the Worrywart and 1 Million Tiny Fires, I think it's called. That's been great. And my subscriptions are like Monstrous, Heathen, a bunch of stuff from Scout. I've been really liking what Scout's been putting out. It's all very interesting stuff. I'm a huge Jeff Lemire fan, and that dude is super prolific. He needs to maintain his non-problematic status, or I will come for him in the streets.
Yeah.
It's on site, man. It's on site. So yeah, like the whole Black Hammer, universe has been really interesting. Family Tree, Gideon Falls, those types of things for sure. Not as much superhero stuff, but, I do pick up some old man things, that I find every now and again, 'cause I'm a big, any kind of swampy guy, shambling heap, nice. You know, muck monster character. That's my bread and butter right there.
That character plays a big part in the Empire Avengers tie-in this week, actually. Spoilers.
Yeah, like, spoilies. Yeah, like the big events, those aren't quite my style.
Gotcha.
But
you're not dying for more punchline?
I really don't care, but that's just me.
Sure.
I have a very specific taste, and I'm very snobby about it. But also, I do also love things like Gut Ghost, where it's just like, you know, he's a ghost with just guts hanging out, and like, that's the premise.
Yeah.
so it's not all highbrow stuff.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, like I've got other like people on staff who love that, and like we talk to each other and we make, you know, like what's your elevator pitch for this? Like how would you explain this? So that's, you know, we all have our areas of expertise and passion, and I think that makes us really strong as a staff, because like I don't need to read Empire, because I'm gonna ask Alex how Empire was.
Nice.
And then I'm gonna go and I'm gonna read I try to read as much, as many like queer creators as I possibly can. Anything that looks even remotely kind of weird, I'm trying to pick it up, just cause that's what I like. And I want to see the kind of the strange things, coming out. I think Canopus is another cool one. I love space madness, and I love anything, sci-fi. So I've been into that one a lot as well.
Nice.
Okay, last one here is, if you weren't managing a comic shop, what would you be doing?
Oh, Lord. I went to school for poetry, so I would be working in the service industry, and I'd probably be on I'm so very grateful to be a part of this particular team, like this particular shop, which, you know, just like gave me a chance a couple of hours a week for a while when I was like working in the service industry, just to like come in and like, you know, do some inventory and stock some shelves, and then, you know, liked me enough to keep offering some more and like ask what, you know, like what I wanted to do. I don't know what I would be doing, honestly. I'd probably still be working in the service industry, to be perfectly honest. a lot has, like, you know, changed in my life in the last, like, 6 years, and even in the last, like, 3 years, just in terms of, like, how I manage, like, how I live my life. I don't know. It's something, working at this shop in particular and in this industry, it's something that I love so much, even down to just, like, ordering and getting good at recommending things and trying to figure out what's going to be, like, what's the next wave. It's, I don't know, I find it, like, very rewarding.
Nice.
Yeah, so I don't want to think about that timeline, really.
Well, then let's move on. In our last segment, we end every show this way. It's called Off Topic Top Shelf. What is something you're into right now that's not comics related after we just spoke for over an hour about comic books?
That's not comics related. Yeah. I'm, like, looking around my home right now and I can't, so watching, like, a ton of movies, I don't know if it's quite comics related. I know, I think I'm safe here. Watching a ton of movies, like, with my partner has been just, like, a way to, just kind of, like, you know, chill out, like, during, like, when we were, like, locked down, or, like I worked all day. What I want to do is just, like, watch, like, horror movies from, like, the 90s. Like, I watched, like, 2 Urban Legends movies last night.
Nice.
And just, like, you know, 90s, like, thrillers and, like, sci-fi and horror movies. Just watching movies and kind of, like, hanging out with my partner. I've been into that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
Yeah, when the pandemic started, I pounded through all the Screams. I don't remember liking them when they first came out, but...
you know, they vary. But it's still, like, you know what to expect.
Right.
And you just, like, ruminating on, like, 90s, like, fashion in these, like, you know, teen and, like, early 20s, like, the 90s to, like, 2000, mm-hmm. that is something that I am just fascinated by, because I lived that life of low-rise jeans and butterfly clips, and it's, like, a horror show.
I don't remember dressing like the characters in Clueless, but I probably did.
I wanted to so bad. Yeah, now having, like, a room in my home where it's just, like, this is where the clothes live. that's, like, a personal achievement that I've unlocked as a, you know, as a childless 30-something. I'm pretty happy with that. Like, a Cher style. Nothing rotates like Cher's
right.
and Clueless. But I'm not beyond trying to make that happen.
Sure. Well, Jill Carter, thank you so much for being on the show. Jill is the manager at Kamikaze, Eisner Award-winning Kamikaze comic book shop on 407 Highland Ave in Somerville. This was a lot of fun. Thanks so much.
Thanks. And, you know, we're open every single day. You can come in. It's a great time. I would be happy to meet anybody listening. Just, you know, shout us out. I can't wait to talk to everyone.
Nice. Thanks. Yeah, and tell them that the AIPT Comics podcast sent you.
Yes, definitely do. And we'll shout you out for sure. Thank you for having me. This has been delightful.
Thank you.